Welcome to the Belfast Men's Health Group with myself, Paul O'Kean, and our podcast today is with Norman Bowman. Norman is a cognitive behavioural therapist or a CBT therapist. He'll explain all that. But before we get into what CBT is and the benefits of it, Norman's going to tell us a wee bit of, about himself. Norman, firstly, welcome for coming and thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me. And I just want to mark your card. It's Bowman, not Bowman. Oh. Everybody calls me Bowman. Norman Bowman.
Norman Bowman.
Thanks very much, Paul. A wee bit about me. Well,
yes.
I was born not too far from here. I was born in Daphne Street, which is just off the Donegal Road there. And born in Daphne Street there in 1966, we moved up to Beaver. And I started attending, Newton Breda Secondary School. Mm-hmm. And I left school at 15 to become an apprentice joiner, which is a brilliant job. I left school, started 1970, it was 6th of April, just after Easter. But I tell you, I was walking out of school and I was thinking to myself, what am I doing here? Because I had ambition to be a cameraman for David Attenborough or something on the BBC. Anyway, listen, my father worked in the built and trade, my grandfather worked in the built and trade. I started in the built and trade and it really didn't suit me. So no. I was on the brew for a while. And then my father kept saying, why don't you get a job inside? You're not working in all weathers. Mm-hmm. At that time, my brother was working up in Purdiesburn as a student nurse and there was a guy across the street from us was working on Purdiesburn as a student nurse. My father says, why don't you apply? So I did apply. And at that time, all you had to do really was to do an interview and an exam. And yeah. I did the interview and the exam and was successful, luckily for me. Mm-hmm. And on the 15th of May, 1972, I started work in Purdiesburn Hospital as a student nurse. And I spent 7 happy years up until 1979. And sometimes you get into a wee bit of a rut. And I was thinking, should I go over and do my general in the city? So I applied to do my general training in the city hospital, went over, spent a year and a half in the city, qualified as an SRN and it's an RGN now. But after I qualified, I went straight back to Purdiesburn. Problem was, at Purdiesburn, you were working shift work. I like to go to the football on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And it meant every other Saturday, I was missing a match, basically. And then, in 1981, wasn't there the inaugural, they were doing the first CPN course in the School of Nursing at Purdiesburn. It was an academic year.
Now, CPN, what is that for our listeners?
Community Psychiatric Nursing course. It was a Community Psychiatric Nursing course for an academic year. And I thought that would suit me down to 9 to 5 off every Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I applied and luckily, again, was successful in getting on the course. Spent a nice year doing learning about community psychiatric nursing. But at that time, there was no community psychiatric nursing service. So on completion of the course, I went back to Purdiesburn. And then in October or November 1981, was the development of the CPN service in Belfast. I applied for the job and again was lucky enough to get the job. And I spent 14 happy years working in Shankill Health Centre, met some lovely people, worked with some lovely people. But again, you get into a wee bit of a rut. And then around, it was January 1996, I was looking at the Belfast Telegraph. Used to be the job vacancies on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. Glancing through the paper and heard a nice spotted job. A year and a half full-time course doing cognitive behavioural psychotherapy at the University of Ulster. Now, I honestly wasn't au fait. I didn't really know what cognitive behavioural psychotherapy was, but I thought a year and a half at the university, that would suit me. Yeah. So I applied for the course, and what you had to do, you did an interview and you did a presentation. And part of my presentation, I was saying to the folk who were interviewing me, when I would see someone coming in to see me at the health centre, and they'd come in and they were a bit down on it, and after maybe an hour of talking, they left with a bit of a skip in their step. Mm-hmm. And then maybe I'd see them in a fortnight's time and they're again, they're down. But after an hour's talking, they leave with a bit of a skip in their step. And I said to the folk at the interview panel when I was doing the presentation, I said, I would like, when you look at the Oxfam analogy, give a man a face, you feed him for a day. Mm-hmm. Teach him how to face and you feed him for a lifetime. I said, I like to teach these people how to face. Basically, I'd like to give them the tools so that when they leave, when I see them again, they've still a skip in their step. Mm-hmm. So fortunately for me, I got on the course a year and a half, started in August 1996. Now, I have to say, it's the hardest thing I ever did. Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the best things I ever did. Hard because what it did, they brought you into the university. Then they stripped you down and put you back together as a cognitive behavioral psychotherapist. And it was a It was difficult, mm-hmm. but I got through it. And on when was it? The 1st of January 1998, I started work in Crumlin Road Health Centre as a cognitive behaviour psychotherapist. And again, spent another 10 happy years doing CBT. Mm-hmm. Then I was fortunate enough I could retire at 55. So it was May 2010. I thought I was happy at my job, but I thought, listen, I could take retirement here. So I did. And then in 2012, again, I was fortunate enough to be contacted by the School of Nursing and Midwifery at Queen's University, mm-hmm. asking would I come along and assist in the teaching of cognitive behavioural psychotherapy, the diploma course and a certificate course. And I was happy to do so. And I've been there to date. And that's me.
Well, Norman, you've had a bit of good fortune there because there's a lot of good fortune along the way.
Don't I have been you know? Most fortunate. Very, very lucky. Very lucky indeed.
Fair play, yeah. So then, come back a wee bit. Growing up, was there any mentors in your life? Any sort of people you looked up to? Any hero-y type?
Yeah, well, one of my first heroes as such, I'm sure it's something similar for lots of people, was my grandfather on my father's side. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, he worked in the building trade. He was a labourer all his days, but he was a big man. He was a piper, played the pipes in Shaftesbury Pipe Band. Mm-hmm. And he was just a great big man. And, you know, not only did I admire him, but I always wanted to be with him and mm-hmm. was fortunate enough to be with him for most of the time, you know. But other inspirational people, I'll tell you, the person who's been most inspirational in my life and who has blessed my life more than anybody is my wife, actually. Mm-hmm. And simply because she's so passionate and tireless in the pursuit of meeting the needs of those under her care. Mm-hmm. And anybody who knows her will know she's a special lady. Mm-hmm. You know, if they've worked with her or if they've been in receipt of her care, they'll know what I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. What does your wife do?
My wife is also a community psychiatric nurse. She mm-hmm. trained. But first, I met Susan in Purdiesburn when I first started. We started in 72, as I say. I met her in September 72. We started going out together in 76, and then we got married in 81. But Susan trained in mental health. Then she went and did her general. Then she went and did her midwifery. Then she went to London to do what was called psychosocial interventions, it was then the Thorne course, they called it. Mm-hmm. But now she's back. Susan's retired as well, but she does 3 days a week. Mm-hmm.
No, I saw her at a wee course there the other day.
Right, then you'll know what I mean.
So tell us a wee bit about cognitive behavioural psychotherapy expanding it. Maybe this is two questions at once. Tell us a wee bit about it and then can it be practiced? Now, you did say that you would send your patients away and then a couple of weeks later you'd see them again.
Oh, that was when I was a CPN, I was doing community psychiatric nursing, simply because of my own limited skills. It was nothing to do with the individual. Cognitive behavioural psychotherapy or CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, mm-hmm. when you break it down into the two parts, the cognitive part and then the behavioural part, cognitions, what it refers to is how you see things, how you view things, how you interpret things, your thoughts, mm-hmm. basically. That's the cognition part. Now, the difficulty about that is there's research done in Ontario over in Canada identified that we get approximately 6,000 thoughts a day. Mm-hmm. And for lots of us, especially when we're feeling out ourselves, these thoughts pass in and pass out again. Like trains going through a station, they just pop in and pop out. Now, when we're not out ourselves, when we're at a low ebb or when we're feeling stressful, lots of those thoughts, which are automatic, or become habitual, but lots of them are faulty or they're mistaken. Mm-hmm. But when we get a thought like that, very rarely do we go, ah, now, wait a minute, that's a faulty thought. When we get a thought, we generally run with it. And most of these thoughts are effortless. They just flow. Now, the guy who really came up with cognitive therapy was a guy called Beck, over in America. He just died there a couple of years ago. He was 100-year-old. But anyway, Beck came up with this simple phrase, and it goes along the lines of, how you think is how you feel, and how you feel is how you behave. Mm-hmm. Now, let me explain that. Say it's 6 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of November, it's slushing outside, you can hear the rain beating against the window, you have a bit of a head cold, mm-hmm. and you're getting up to go down to the sorting office to get a post bag, to go around the streets for the next 3 or 4 hours posting the mail. Think of how you would be feeling. You'd be thinking, I couldn't be annoyed with this. What's the point of doing it? You'd be feeling pretty lousy. And that would affect how you behave. You'd probably just want to pull a duvet over you. Now, think of this scenario. 6 o'clock in the morning, middle of November, slushing outside, you can hear the rain. You have a bit of a head cold, but in 2 hours' time, there's a taxi arriving with 3 of your best friends to go to Italy for an all-expenses-paid long weekend. Mm-hmm. Now, how you'd be thinking as I'm looking, you'd be up out of bed like a lilty. Now, here's the thing, Paul. The two situations are exactly the same. It's mm-hmm. 6 o'clock in the morning, it's slushing outside, you have a bit of a head cold, it's the middle of November. But how you think determines how you feel, and how you feel determines how you behave. Now, the behavioural side of this refers to what we would be talking about, excesses and deficits in behaviour. And again, to explain that, say someone, if they touch something and then they get a thought, I could be dirty, I could be contaminated. And if I'm contaminated, I could contaminate other people. So then they might understandably want to wash their hands. But then they doubt, are my hands clean? So they wash them again. And then they doubt, but are they clean? So they would continually wash their hands. Or indeed, someone leaving the house, and they check is the cooker off, and then they check is the back door locked, and then they check is the fridge door shut, and then the doubt, is the cooker locked in? And so repeatedly doing something, that would be an excess in behaviour. Mm-hmm. A deficit in behaviour would be, say, someone who doesn't like getting in the lift, someone who doesn't like to leave the house, someone who doesn't like to answer the phone or talk to people. There are deficits in behaviour. The other part of the behaviour thing is that we would also look at what's called safety-seeking behaviours and avoidance behaviours. Mm-hmm. A safety-seeking behaviour would be, it's defined as any behaviour that's designed to prevent or minimise a feared catastrophe. So if someone's walking down the street and they're a bit anxious about talking to someone, they might carry a newspaper with them to let on their reading. Now, I can't talk to you now, Paul. I'm going to be, you know, that's a safety behaviour. If they see someone coming and there's an entry to their left and they think, hey, I could go down this entry, I would avoid meeting them, but it might add 10 minutes onto their journey, they would take that. That's a safety-seeking behaviour. Mm-hmm. And an effort to prevent or minimise any feared catastrophe that they might experience. Or indeed avoidance behaviours, mm-hmm. avoiding going out, avoiding travelling on public transport, et cetera, et cetera. One thing I would say is the behaviours that individuals adopt, say someone doesn't go out because they're fearful, if I go out, I'm going to take a panic attack. And if I take a panic attack, I could die. Mm-hmm. If someone told me that, I would be saying, look, see everything that you're doing and indeed everything that you're not doing. Like, for example, going out. As far as I'm concerned, everything that you currently do is both perfectly understandable and indeed perfectly reasonable, given the appraisal you're making. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that, if I go out there, I'm going to take a panic attack and die, wild horses wouldn't get me out there. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem. By not going out, the individual doesn't become anxious. and they don't die. So they mistakenly begin to believe that the only reason they're not anxious and the only reason they didn't die is because of the avoidance. Now, the difficulty about that is, the way I use the analogy, it's like trying to put a fire out using a bucket of petrol. People would say to me, why have I been like this for the last 2 years? And it's precisely because of what they're doing, mm-hmm. and more importantly, because of what they're avoiding.
Mm-hmm. Busy man. These things happen.
No.
I'm fascinated with this.
What I'm saying is,
so that was a bucket of petrol.
Not the bucket of petrol. When you're trying to put a fire out with a bucket of petrol, all it does is just keep the fire going.
Of course.
By avoiding, all you're doing is maintaining the problem. Mm-hmm. Because by avoiding going out, it never allows you to see what actually does happen if you go out. And more importantly, if you remain out, if you stay in a situation. Very simply, especially with regards to anxiety-related problems, what people fear happening, and the main things that people fear happening is, if they become so anxious in a situation, they either fear, I'm going to faint, I'm going to die, or indeed, equally as frightening, I'm going to lose control and go crazy. And in actual fact, none of those things can happen. But what we need to do through the treatment of CBT is to test out what actually does happen. Now, we wouldn't just send to someone, look, go out and see what happens. Prior to any kind of treatment, say, we would do a very in-depth assessment. We'd look at the problem as it's affecting the person right at this minute. It's not that we're not interested in their past, because we are, but need to know what's got this person to where they're at the minute. But our main focus is on, how is this problem affecting you right at this minute, and what can we do to either change it or ameliorate it or whatever. And then once we've got an eye, once myself and the individual have a clear understanding of what the problem is, then we go on to, we would set goals. What would you like to be able to do? Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes people would say, I'd like to be happy. Now, that's not a great goal. Mm-hmm. A goal would be, I would say you were happy. Mm-hmm. What would you be doing at the minute that you're not doing? Well, I'd be going into town. That's a goal, to go into town on my own once a week and remain for 1 hour. That's a goal. So after we do the assessment, we would set, I would look at goals or targets, and we would do some kind of measurement. For instance, a measurement could be a subjective measurement. If I was to ask yourself, going out, 0 to 8, 0, it wouldn't be a problem. 8, I couldn't do it. Where would you be being around an 8? That's a measurement. And hopefully, as we would go through treatment, that measurement would could not come down. The other thing we would be doing is, it's not that I tell anybody what they're doing. CBT is collaborative in its nature. Mm-hmm. You and I would be agreeing. I know where we've to go, but we've to do it at your pace. There'd be a lot of education to make sense and understand, why is my heart racing? Why is my mouth dry? Why do I feel a bit lightheaded? Mm-hmm. And then once we've got all that and we both have a good understanding, then we would move on to the actual practical stuff, such as gradually going out. Now, again, if it was someone with agoraphobia, say, we wouldn't just be saying, let's go out. What we'd be doing is we'd be looking at all the things the individual currently avoids. Mm-hmm. And then we'd get them into a hierarchy, starting with the thing that would cause the least distress if they were to confront it, working up to the thing that would cause the most distress. And then what we'd do is, we pick the one that causes the least distress and we begin to work on that. And there's different techniques we would use to work on that. So hopefully that's give you a bit of an idea.
I know the whole thing is fascinating around sort of thoughts, feelings and then behaviour.
And how they're all linked.
Yeah.
How they're all linked, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's important for the individual. Not only is it important for me to have a sound understanding of that, but for the individual themselves to really begin to make sense of this.
And you said about thoughts having, on average, maybe 6,000 thoughts. And if you're low, those thoughts questioning some of them, or well, having the ability to question.
Well,
or,
you see, as I said to you earlier, Paul, 6,000 thoughts or thereabouts. And when we have thoughts, they're effortless. Mm-hmm. Nobody thinks about thinking, basically. They just flow. Yeah. Now, see, if you wake up in the morning and you're not feeling 100%, not being not yourself, and you're laying in bed and you're going, what's the point of getting up? Mm-hmm. Sure, what's the point of getting washed and shaved? Sure, who's going to be looking at me? Mm-hmm. Sure, everything I turn my hand to turns to disaster. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think like that, you'll feel like that mm-hmm. and generally behave in that fashion. And what most people might do, just stay in bed.
Yeah.
Now, here's the difficulty with that. When we're experiencing any kind of low mood or depression, we tend to withdraw. Mm-hmm. We withdraw. We tend to stop doing things, getting involved. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty about that is the more we withdraw, the more depressed we become. And the more depressed we become, the more we withdraw. Mm-hmm. And it just becomes a vicious circle. Mm-hmm. The thing about depression, when we're looking at depression, or indeed when we're looking at anxiety-related issues, there's two ways of working, and they're both, one's cognitive and one's behavioural. Mm-hmm. Cognitive works from the inside out. For example, with depression, amongst other things, individuals experience what's called negative automatic thoughts, and they just get a flow of them. Mm-hmm. The problem, as the name suggests, they're all negative. They're all doom and gloom. Things we've forgot about come back to haunt us. They come automatically. They just flow. Mm-hmm. But the issue and the problem is people believe them. People believe what they're thinking. You're useless, you're no good, you're a failure, nobody could love you. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem about that is how you think affects how you feel, and then how you feel affects how you behave. So what we do in CBT with regards working from the inside out, working with the thoughts, we help to try and capture the thought, And how sometimes we know we're thinking certain thoughts is when you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach, that should be a warning sign. What's going through my head at the moment? Mm-hmm. Because in order to reframe a thought, in order to look for evidence that supports it, you have to first capture the thought. It's mm-hmm. called cognitive restructuring. And it's a difficult technique. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people think we're trying to help people to have happy thoughts or better thoughts, and it isn't. It's trying to look at the evidence that supports that thought, I'm useless. Mm-hmm. An individual might not be good at one thing, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean they're no good at everything. Yeah. And it's all about trying to get a balance, you know?
No, I mean, to be fair, I could talk about this all day.
Yeah.
I really could, because it's fascinating and really beneficial,
yeah.
you know, without a doubt. But I suppose we our time's limited here, but I definitely could. Norman, how do you look after yourself then?
Well, I'll tell you.
As in, you know, your mental health, your physical health. What I remember,
I don't know where I read this or heard it somewhere, and I would use it when I would see people. I would say to people, look, There's four things you need in order to live. What are they? And people can tell me three of them. They can generally come up with, you need air, correct. You need food, correct. You need oxygen, correct. What's the fourth one? And anyway, the fourth one is elimination. Get into the toilet. If you don't get rid of your waste, you'll die. However, there's other things that if you don't get, you'll not die, but you'll not live. You'll exist. In order to live, in order to keep that sparkle, you need things like something to look forward to, something to get up for in the morning, affection, company. Mm-hmm. All those things, you'll not die without them, but you'll not live. And lots of us, including myself, go through periods when we're not living, we're just existing. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to the Saturdays for the football, mm-hmm. and sometimes on a Tuesday night I'm lucky enough to get the football. Mm-hmm. The other thing is I love my music. I would when I retired, I got an Apple computer, which is GarageBand, and you can upgrade it to Pro Logic or Logic Pro or something, but you can make your own music. I would go upstairs at 7 o'clock, and at 11 o'clock, my wife's rapping the door saying, Norman, I'm going to bed. You just get lost in it, making music. It's brilliant. And I have a guitar sitting at the side of the settee and I just pick it up and strum it. But I go out for walks. I like to go for a walk. Mm-hmm. The only problem is where I live, when I go for a walk, it's all downhill. But I don't walk back uphill. I would walk into town. It'd take me an hour and a half, maybe right. Walk, but I get the bus home. Yeah. And I'm lucky enough now to have the bus pass, which is absolutely fantastic. So basically, getting out, having company, everything in moderation. Yeah. I like to go on when the Blues are playing away. I go down to town, Susan and myself, and we get a couple of drinks and a wee bite to eat. And get left home again. Mm-hmm. That's something to look forward to. Something to get up for in the morning, going to Queens. Mm-hmm. You know, all those things. That's what keeps me going.
Now, you've been, you mentioned the Blues.
Going well, top of the league.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You have been supporting Linfield for how many years?
So, well, I was about 65, I'm sure.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Season ticket holder, premier seat holder. Oh, there's no nonsense now, Paul. It's all the VIP stuff, you know.
Very good. No, they're doing rightly.
They are indeed.
Yes. So, and guitar. You said
guitar,
about,
yeah, I love a guitar.
Because you can do the...
Tin muscle. My wife soon bought me a wee mandolin. Now, I'm not great in the mandolin, but I can get a tune out of it.
Right.
But soon also bought me a 12-string Taylor guitar. It's gorgeous.
Right.
Lovely sound to it, you know. But I annoy everybody. That's the only thing.
And you do like entertaining, don't you?
Oh, yeah. So that's what you're doing at Queens. That's not entertaining. No. I enjoy the social scene. But I tell you, believe it or not, I'm quite a shy person. Although I'm doing this here, I was asked to give a talk one time to a men's group. There was a name of this group, I can't remember. But the guy wanted me to talk about me and my life. And I'd sooner talk about things rather than about me, you know. But there you go. Well, I got through it.
That's why you're here, because you're an interesting fella. I've known you years from playing football.
In the hole.
That's what I always said when we were playing. Hole. Get the ball in the hole. I can some damage. But anyway. So, now, moving into more lighthearted stuff.
Yeah.
A dream job.
I tell you what, I would give. I watched Fraser, the psychiatrist. He's brilliant. But Daphne Moon once said to Niles Crane, I'd give my right arm to learn the piano. And I thought that's clever. But I'd give my right arm to go into space. I'd give anything to go into space. I'd love to see the curvature of the Earth.
Yep.
It used to be you could go on Concorde and it went so high that you could see the curvature of the Earth, but Concorde's no longer there. No. But I would, seeing the way Virgin, does this, if I won the lottery, I would maybe think of investing a bit. I'd love to, dream to go into space.
Wow.
Definite.
Right, okay, let's elaborate on that. Would you go to Mars?
I wouldn't go to Mars. I'd sail away to Mars. Just space. Go to the moon. I might think of the moon now, but no, definitely Mars is a bit.
It is a bit far. I think it's 6 months.
Oh, no.
I'm fascinated with space myself.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I think it's 4 days to get to the moon. But 6 months to get to Mars.
No. Mm-hmm. The moon would do me.
The moon
just into space. In and out, that would do me. Happy enough.
I think you've already answered this one, which is what makes you happy. And you've already... Blues and play guitar and your music.
And the grandchildren. I have 3 grandchildren. They keep me young. The only thing is, they're... All of them have one here and 2 in England, and they're football mad. Football mad. And the thing, I'm 69 going on 18. I cannot keep it. Like, I'm not as fit as well as I was, you know. But, the grandchildren keep young as well, you know. And we see them quite regularly, even the ones in England.
Right. Now, going back to when we did play football, you were always handy. I always thought you were decent.
Yeah, shoulder.
You're always decent. But you're right, you weren't that fit. You didn't get a lot of running.
Paul, I played the Brazilian kind of football. I let the ball come to me, then got rid of it. Oh, no. And I used to give the short corners to Mr. McLaren. I don't know whether you remember those short corners. In the hole.
Very good. Well, Norman, I think that's us for the day. And all that remains for me to say is Thanks very much. That was absolutely fascinating.
No, thank you, Paul.
And maybe we'll get an opportunity to get him back at some point, because this cognitive behavioural therapy, it really is fascinating.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, Paul.